last submitter for the day is Springlands Group, which I assume is you sitting at our submitter's table. Thank you. Are you given Tails, is it?
Tails, yep.
Yep. So we've received your 46-page original submission and we've read that, so you might be pleased to know you don't need to read that out to us because we've already read it. But you're very welcome to highlight key points for us. Thank you.
Okay, hello, my name's Gavin Taylor. Thanks for providing an opportunity to speak today. I think it's an important process that as many of the region get involved in and make sure that we get a balanced outcome. My wife Kylie and I are shareholders and directors of Springlands Group Limited. We farm 455 hectares in Waipounmu. Our operation runs sheep, beef, deer and dairy support. I think you've got my hearing statement there. There's a map indicating property boundaries across three of physiographic zones. Their family has been farming in the area for over 100 years across four generations, and we're keen to see the next generation be involved as guardians of the land as the previous generations and myself have been also. We take an intergenerational approach to land ownership and management. Our asset has developed over that time and has allowed our family and others to create a living from the land in that time. It is often portrayed that farmers have little regard for the way they treat their land, i.e. the environment, which for a minority this could be true, but for the majority we need to ensure that we farm our land in a way that's going to preserve and enhance the land for future generations. Speaking of ourselves, we have a deep understanding of our land and how to farm it. Physiographic zones do not correspond to how we best manage our land, particularly with the grazing of pasture and crops in periods through the winter. There's an abundance of groundwater in the area. This is a resource that can be utilised for irrigation of pastures and crops. This provides an opportunity to mitigate the impacts of summer dries and to ensure pasture growth can be maximised and stock can be well fed through the summer and autumn. There has been an increase in irrigation in the area over the past 10 years with no obvious detrimental effect on the local environment. Our property boundary is the Matara River, which is the only surface water on the entire property. We see the river as an asset that we've been able to enjoy recreationally and wish the future generations can do so also. We've excluded the stock from the river edges approximately 15 years ago to help any potential damage by stock. The impact of stock inclusion has been the generation of gorse and broom along the river edges, which now requires aerial control of herbicide on a frequent basis to prevent the area choked with these noxious weeds. And that obviously comes at a cost to all ratepayers. As a family, we fish, swim, duck shoot and camp at the river. We have no concerns over the quality of the water that flows past our property. However, I would not swim in the same river below Gore or Matara Township. We continue to hear in the media that New Zealand's water quality is continuing to decline on the back of agriculture. However, it appears that the data has been extrapolated or manipulated to create the impression that our waterways are continuing to decline. NIWA data on national water quality indicates water quality on average has improved over time, and the latest water quality data released from EES and interpreted by independent consultants also indicate that on average the water quality across the region is being maintained or improved. We're concerned that EES and the council is about to make significant changes with the proposed water and land plan, which has been created to hold the line in respects to water quality. Largely it seems as though we're already achieving this, and the implementation of the water and land plan as an intermediary to the limit setting process is going to have significant economic cost to the region. We acknowledge that further practices that could be implemented to improve water quality in the region, but there are better ways to approach these. We have a bore on our property that EES has been monitoring for the last 15 years. Over this time there have been some large fluctuations in nitrate levels and a slight trend upwards in nitrate levels. However, the results that EES has presented to us have always remained under the drinking water standard for nitrates. There have been some indicators that there is potentially an issue with increasing groundwater nitrate levels in the Wenderside groundwater zone. Recently, a catchment group has been started in the Wenderside groundwater zone after discussion with ES science staff, indicating that there was less known about the groundwater in the area than previously thought. I'm involved with this group to ensure that as a catchment, we can accurately assess the current state of the environment against the necessary standards and engage the catchment community to help manage any necessary changes that could also be required to sustain or improve water quality in the catchment. I believe that a catchment-led initiative in conjunction with EES will provide a much better outcome for water quality and economic benefits for the immediate and wider community in the region, rather than a blanket regulation for all aspects of farming. As a landowner in the Old Matera physiographic zone, we are very concerned around the impacts of land use constraints on the land values in the area. The groundwater zone is not well understood, and we do not have good data for science-based decisions on the state of the water quality or the factors impacting water quality. It seems as though ES are looking to impose constraints on the area and region before we know what the nutrient outputs can be sustained at. I believe the community can be much easier engaged by involving them in the limit setting process sooner and having them determine what they need to implement on their land to alter nutrient outputs to make a difference in their environment, rather than imposing conditions, constraints, costs, and a loss of equity from an interim measure. The specific parts I'd like to comment on in the plan. One, physiographic zones, policies 4 to 12. There have been no changes suggested in the section 42A report to the policies referring to the physiographic zones. The physiographic zones, there has been an attempt for a peer review as per the section 42A report, but the science still does not seem as though it's grounded yet. You're about to create a significant amount of change to the economics of our region before we have a good understanding of what the actual outcome will be. In reference to policy 9.3, I disagree with the wording to strongly discourage the grantings of consent for new dairy or intensive winter grazing. I believe this unnecessarily creates undue influence on the council in assessing consent applications when the effects may be less than minor with changes in system, infrastructure or technology in time. The area where we farm is in the Wenderside groundwater zone, and part of the farm is in the Old Matera physiographic zone. The monitoring data in this groundwater zone is limited across the shallow groundwater, deep groundwater aquifers and surface water. This makes it difficult to determine the current state of the water quality and how nutrients in the groundwater interact with the catchment and downstream, as also agreed or indicated by ES science staff. For the council to base a decision to actively discourage consents for new dairy or intensive winter grazing on this limited data is irresponsible for councillors, given that the decision will have a significant impact on land value. The further monitoring data compiled by the newly established Wenderside groundwater zone catchment group shows water quality is not of as much concern, then the council would be responsible for unnecessarily devaluing land in that area. This approach will damage the ongoing working relationship of farmers in the region, and this is not an outcome that I'd like to see for more than one reason. ES Council and farmers need to be able to work collaboratively together to achieve the best outcomes for the community and the environment. By the response from submitters to the plan, it does not seem that there has been a positive engagement. The farmers have successfully contributed towards the great province that we have become over the decades, and with the current plan it now seems we are going to be expected to fit a criteria which has been set by some who have limited understanding of the practical implementations. We recommend the removal of policy 9.3 whilst further work is completed to establish better data set in conjunction with the ES to help provide a better outcome in the limit setting process. Under farming, from the section 42A report, rule 21 now seems that encompasses rule 22. And as indicated in their response to policy 9.3, the impacts of restrictions for new dairy or intensive winter grazing referenced in rule 21 will have large impacts on land value. The wording in this next paragraph is not quite right. Dairy in the old Matera physiographic zone represents only 2% of the total area under existing dairy in the southern region. Therefore, other land uses or natural conditions are potentially contributing towards current groundwater quality status. Given the low percentage of land use in dairy in the old Matera zone, a shift to dairy or changes to best managed practices in both dairy and or in intensive wintering could quickly have a positive impact on groundwater quality if that is an issue. I recommend that new dairy and intensive winter grazing become discretionary activities in the old Matera zone, and that council-based decisions of consent approval on an effects basis without undue influence created by the stigma of a non-complying activity status. Intensive winter grazing, rule 23. Changes have been made in the section 42A report to remove the 20 hectare restriction on old Matera physiographic zone. This is an improvement, but retaining a 50 hectare limit still does not go far enough to create equality. I recommend the council go to a percentage-based threshold for intensive winter grazing for the following reasons. One, large landowners will be not disadvantaged on a percentage basis. Larger farms can sustainably winter crop areas up to 15 to 20% of the land area, which could be well in excess of 50 hectares. The example heard today in Gunglapla's case. Smaller farms cannot sustainably intensive winter crop areas over 20%, but this is possible by cropping up to 50 hectares. Soil structure is important to soil health, nutrient cycling, and nutrient utilisation. The ability to continuously, intensively winter crop large portions of a small farm will not be able to be influenced through a consenting process. We oppose Rule 23B, the setbacks are potentially too restrictive, and with the creation of the rule, the farmer has no discretion to use what is appropriate. The length of a slope leading to the edge and grazing management will impact on the necessary setback. I think that Rule 23B7, numbers 1 to 3 from the original plan, should be used as a good management guide and not be used to create a rule. We're not supportive of consenting of intensive winter grazing, as this will only add a further cost to the council and farmers, and the outcome will not necessarily improve water quality. I believe that the FEMPs will be a better way to encourage best practice where it is currently not being used. The use of FEMPs and funding into land sustainability advice, either from industry or regional council, will be a better way to engage with farmers to encourage change where required. Any farms who do not adhere to practices that enhance water quality can be managed by the current compliance rules. I think it's important, this is not included in the statement, and it's on the back of what I've heard today, I think it's important to allow people to manage what fits their farms in respect to winter cropping. One rule is not going to fit all, We've heard from two submitters today how fodder beet doesn't fit their situation. On our land, where we've got relatively shallow topsoils, fodder beet is a very sustainable crop. And with the recent science coming out, it indicates that potentially N loss could in fact be lower than what it is from a kale crop carrying the same capacity. So one rule is not going to fit all. Water quantity. We oppose rule 49A1 as set out in the section 42A report. This has been an amendment. This will place cost on large landowners on extensive hill country properties where gravity water systems are fed by surface water intakes. It is proposed that a consent will be required for any takes above 40,000 litres a day. The total surface take of combined stock and domestic water takes could easily exceed 40,000 litres a day on a larger farm. And we suggest that 49A1 and 49A2 are rewritten to reflect that stock water and domestic takes are not restricted to 40,000 litres a day. Imposing consents on surface water takes may have a negative impact on encouraging hill country farms to install reticulated water systems, which will reduce the need for stock to access waterways on farm. We oppose rule 49A7 and rule 54A4 as stated in the section 42A report. The requirement to meter all water takes above 2,000 litres is extremely onerous and again will create cost which the landholder will have to cover. The cost will be for infrastructure and reporting, which for some hill country takes could be prohibitive depending on the location of the abstraction, for power sources and telemetry options at the abstraction point. Administration costs will also increase if the data is called upon, which it's not indicated it is mandatory. We do not think monitoring stock and domestic supplies will have a positive impact on water quality in Salford. If the council wishes to monitor the number of surface takes or groundwater takes, information could be extracted from the FEMPs. If water abstraction points for water takes and stock numbers were attained, then the amount of the take could be easy enough to extrapolate out rather than all farmers over the size of possibly 20 to 25 hectares having to have water meters installed. The conclusion, we acknowledge that we need to look after our land and our environment, and largely farmers have been doing this in our region. And this is evident in the latest water quality assessment for the region. Observations of management of water quality in other rural and urban areas in New Zealand and abroad. We need to engage all stakeholders in the community rather than continuing to create sectors of the community fighting against each other when generally we want to achieve the same outcome. We need to base our decisions to significantly change farming in Southland on robust data rather than models. We cannot afford to erode value in the region's farmlands through policies that are not necessarily going to achieve the best outcomes for water quality. And we cannot continue to regulate farming at the cost of economic returns through production losses, exponential increases in administration costs, and increasing workload on administration staffing resources which are already stretched. All need to take responsibility for their own actions to meet water quality targets, which should be determined through the limit setting process. We must also educate all in the community as to what the state of the water quality actually is, and be honest about what that actually is, and how they can have a positive effect on it. On reflection, which again's not in here, I think we're close to holding the line, if we're not holding the line or improving at the moment, which this plan is set out to achieve. Why continue to put resource into this process when we could speed up the steps to limit setting, engage our catchments and our communities into what the real issues are in those catchments, whether it be surface water quality, groundwater quality, get those in the regions, in those areas, to problem solve what they need to do to improve that, and create some limits which they can then measure what they're doing in order how they're going about achieving them.
So do we have any questions for you? Morris,
go easy.
Oh, yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just go back to where you were talking about water testing in the Waipanana area of the bores. You know that a number of the bores, and I'm not sure how many, but you might know better than I do, the number of the bores indicate that groundwater nitrate, where people are getting water for their house supplies, is over the World Health Organization standards. And you say that some of that is true and some of it is not true. Can you elaborate on that? Because I would have thought this would be quite a serious concern if this water isn't safe to drink.
It appears that there are small pockets of isolated shallow groundwater that is showing high nitrate levels, and then you can go to a different part of the terrace and you'll find that those levels are no longer elevated. So there's something happening on the terrace where we're seeing high or elevated nitrate levels, and then in other parts we're not seeing it. And we can't determine what's actually causing that. Mm-hmm. Is it the location of that monitor bore? Is it in a depression in the bottom of a gully, which would naturally accumulate nitrates? Is it on an underground water path? We don't know that. So that's, and with discussion with the team from ES, we want to put in a water testing matrix across the terrace and onto the flats, which encompasses surface water, shallow groundwater and deep water aquifers, to understand what is happening with water quality, how does it interact on surface water, how does the shallow water interact on the deep water. There's been examples where some of those shallow water bores have been improving in nitrogen levels after surrounding land use adoption of good management practice have been put in place. Mm-hmm. So my concern is that we're reacting way too fast before we've actually got a good understanding of what's happening in the area, and by imposing some of the wording there's going to be some significant impacts on land value which could be done unjustifiably when we look back in hindsight.
Alright, that was the main thing I think I was wondering about, because it's important for me to get an understanding of that. Well, you've got really quite a critical issue there, but if you say that it's only in the odd pocket and not widespread, and that you need more information before some sort of rule or some new practice should be imposed, then
it's very critical in the sense that it could have a major impact. The outcomes of this could have a major impact on the livelihoods of those in that area, and I guess that's people understanding what is actually going on and what we actually need to achieve will engage people and will create the right outcomes. By putting us in boxes, it's going to create disengagement from the people that we should be working with, and I don't want to see that.
But I assume you'll agree that if water is not safe to drink, we should be doing something about that.
Yeah, and that's where I think possibly the best solutions for that are going to come from those that are involved in the catchment, working with some key people, so tapping into Environment Southland, tapping into some industry bodies, tapping into some independent hydrologists who we can fund through industry, by industry means. I don't disagree. We've got to make sure that water quality meets the standards. It's the best way of getting there, which is the bit that concerns me.
All right, thanks.
Hello, good afternoon, Mr. Taylor. You've put in quite a substantial submission. Yeah. You know, I know in your statement of evidence today, which you've narrowed down your focus. Is that because you're satisfied with the Section 42A?
Reading through the Section 42A report, there are a number of, concerns that are raised in my submission that have been dealt with through that report. And I've focused, on those that are most critical to our air farming business.
Thank you. Very clear. Thank you.
Yeah, comprehensive contribution you made, Gavin, and I don't need any further explanation, thanks.
And Roy?
Can I just clarify a couple of things, please? In your farming, in your number two, you make reference to percentage 2% of land area under dairy. Are you referring to dairy as in dairy milking cows? Were you referring to dairy as in dairy support?
The statement there is worded different to how it should be. So in the Old Matera zone, the total dairying in that area is equivalent to 2% of dairying in Southland.
Okay.
So there's a very small portion of dairy farms in the Old Matera physiographic zone.
But there's a lot of wintering in the Old Matera.
Yes.
Do you know what area of that is tied up?
No.
Okay. You may mention down under intensive winter grazing in section 5 that the current compliance rules would actually capture what needs to be captured. Are you satisfied through the 42A report that statement is still correct?
My preference is that with farm environmental management plans and limit setting, if catchments knew what their hotspots were around what they needed to, manage from a nutrient aspect, so in Wendon side it could be nitrogen leaching. We may have some practices that we need to do to ensure that we can meet output requirements, and if we can't meet that output, then obviously that is going to be an issue. It's probably harder to measure in a catchment, but that is something the catchment's going to have to deal with. If there's water quality requirements as a result of limit setting in respects to E. coli, sediment, nutrients and water, then best practice should avoid those limits being breached. Similar, to what happens, ignore the limits in Otago, but similar approach to what Otago Regional Council have done. They haven't come out and told farmers what to do. They've said, these are your limits, you work out how you're going to farm to them. And I think that is more engaging with farmers rather than telling them, put your fence 5 metres from the stream, when you might actually only need it a metre and a half at that point to achieve what the nutrient limit restrictions are.
So my understanding is that the limit setting process is still to come.
Yep.
And this plan is setting a foundation for that discussion.
Yep.
So on the foundation of that discussion, are you happy there is enough, as you say, current compliance rules would actually deal with the issues that we know now, not necessarily dealing with the community discussion and the bigger limit setting, which I agree we're still.
Yeah. I'm comfortable that best practice now and the current compliance expectations that we have to meet will allow us to continue to hold the line until we get to catchment limits here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor, for coming in, and thank you for writing down the presentation that you read out to us this afternoon. It's been very helpful, but I have no further questions. Thank you. That's the end of our submitters for the day. We adjourn for now, reconvene at 9 o'clock in the morning. Thank you.